Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the Yellowstone region, bringing you the latest news. I'm Carl Lengel. It is a Monday. The federal government granted an extension for a program that supports rural towns' water systems. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports.
Water operators are responsible for ensuring that drinking and wastewater systems in communities are safe. Rural areas often struggle to find adequate support for these positions and turn to one federal program for help, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Circuit Riders. Circuit Riders are specialists who provide training and support for rural water operators, including those in Montana. Sometimes they even fill in during emergencies. Funding for the program lapsed during the government shutdown in October, but was temporarily extended. The USDA announced this week the contract for the program was renewed for 5 more years, safeguarding those supports for rural communities. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
2 male hikers, identified on multiple social media sites as brothers from Texas, are recovering at the Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center in Idaho Falls after being mauled by at least 1 grizzly bear on May 4th. The attack happened on the Mystic Falls Trail near Old Faithful in Yellowstone National Park. Another hiker on the trail found the severely injured older brother and was able to contact emergency responders, who provided aid before the brothers were transported from the area by helicopter. In a news release late last week, park officials believe a female grizzly bear and 2 or 3 young cubs were involved in the encounter. Park officials are keeping a temporary closure in place for a trail, backcountry campsite, and fishing northwest of the Old Faithful area as they continue the investigation. Chronic wasting disease continues to spread across Wyoming's deer and elk herds. New data from Wyoming Game and Fish shows the disease was detected in several new hunting areas last year in Wyoming. Wyoming Public Radio's Aralise Wallace reports.
The Game and Fish Department's Wildlife Health Laboratory tested more than 5,300 samples in 2025. The results found new detections in 3 deer and 6 elk hunt areas. Jessica Jennings is the lab manager.
As far as deer, 35 of our 37 mule deer herds have had CWD detected, and in elk, 24 of our 34 elk herds have had CWD detected.
Jennings says the CWD is a slow-moving neurological disease that affects deer, elk, moose, and other cervids. There have been no confirmed cases of transmission to humans, but state officials encourage hunters to test harvested animals and avoid consuming infected meat. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Aralise Wallace.
3 western U.S. states have announced a new 2-year deal to stabilize the Colorado River. California, Nevada, and Arizona say their proposal would save just over 3.2 million acre-feet of water through 2028. That's enough water to serve more than 25 million people a year. Some of that includes cuts that were already announced. The deal that still needs approval from state lawmakers and the federal government comes after the driest winter on record. 7 states, including Wyoming, that have been negotiating for a longer-term solution to the dwindling water supply, have constantly hit snags in the talks. A Trump order aimed at national parks to make America beautiful again has reignited a decades-long discussion on whether Grand Teton National Park should build a controversial pathway. KHOL's Jenna McMurtry reports.
The debate had been put to rest in 2016. Back then, a park study determines a bike path along the Moose Wilson Road would impact surrounding wetlands, wildlife corridors, and a culturally significant site. But the 2025 federal order intends to revisit the topic. The park first proposed moving the frequently congested road away from the wetlands. But others say a pathway connecting Teton Village to the park will make the popular cycling route safer. Sam Petrie with Friends of Pathways says bikes might have less of an impact than cars already do.
Conversation focused only on pathway impacts ignores the impacts already created by vehicle infrastructure. So doing nothing is not a no-impact option. It's an impacted area.
He says the fight pits conservationists and pathways advocates against each other, but he believes they share common goals. I'm Jenna McMurtry, KHOL News.
Border officials in the U.S. and Canada announced the seasonal opening of a port of entry between 2 parks linking Montana and Alberta, Canada. YPR's Kay Erickson has the details.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced in a Friday news release the Port of Chief Mountain will open at 9 a.m. Friday, May 15th. The port is on Highway 17 in Glacier County, connecting Glacier National Park in Montana and Waterton Glacier International Peace Park in Alberta. CPB requires travelers to have proof of citizenship documents ready upon arrival at the primary inspection stations. Those can be a valid passport, a passport card, an enhanced driver's license, a trusted traveler card, or a lawful permanent resident card. The Chief Mountain Port will be open for seasonal traffic from May 15th to September 30th. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
Forensic anthropology helps people find and identify deceased loved ones. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports on one Montana-based forensic scientist aiding those impacted by the missing and murdered Indigenous person crisis.
By retrieving information stored in DNA, scientists can learn who a person was, where they may have lived, and even connect their remains with their family. Haley Omiso, a member of the Hopi tribe and descendant of the Blackfeet, has been doing this work for years. She founded Okami Forensics in 2023, which serves Indigenous families looking for their loved ones. During a presentation May 5th at the Museum of the Rockies, Omiso said 43 Indigenous people are missing in Montana right now.
15 have been missing for less than a year, and 28 have been missing for more than a year, so that's 65%. Have been missing for more than a year.
Omiso worked on 15 cases in 2025. Her group helps identify remains, lead searches, and gather DNA data. She says an integral part of her work isn't just the identification, but how it's done. She tries to avoid common forensic science practices that may damage bone or samples during the process.
We can use non-destructive analyses. We can exercise tribal data sovereignty, and just really go about the project in a way that is in favor of the tribe and still incorporates cultural beliefs and tribal knowledge.
She's used her services to support tribes across the state and country. She also sits on the state advisory council aimed at addressing this issue. Most recently, it developed a sponsored license plate to raise funds that support their work.
So that funding can help to put on more trainings to get people in the community trained so that they could then go back and help with their community-led searches.
Omiso says her work is accomplished in large part with volunteers. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
Montana anglers have a chance to shape future fishing regulations. FWP is taking public input in Billings today on 41 preliminary proposals for the next 2 years. According to FWP's press release, staff will present regional fishing regulation proposals, answer questions, and collect input. Region 5 Fish and Wildlife Commissioner Gagnon will also be at the meeting. Comments gathered help staff develop a formal proposal package for the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission. Regulations are set by the commission, which is a 7-member board appointed by Governor Greg Gianforte and independent from FWP. The formal proposal package goes out for public comment in August. Final regulations are set for the October 2026 Commission meeting. The public meeting for input in Billings is today at 6 p.m. in the community room at Billings Public Library. The full set of preliminary proposals for the entire state are available online at fwp.mt.gov. One seat on Montana's 7-member Supreme Court is up for election in 2026. Two colleagues are competing for the promotion. Montana Public Radio's Shaley Ragar reports.
The two district court judges vying for the state's nonpartisan high court are both from Flathead County. Judges Dan Wilson and Amy Eddy will both advance to the general election, as the top two vote-getters in judicial elections always move forward. It's Wilson's second run for the Montana Supreme Court after a loss last cycle. It's the first attempt for Eddy. Eddy was first appointed to the bench in 2015. She also oversaw a special court to hear asbestos exposure claims out of Libby. She describes her approach to constitutional law as reserved.
I believe very strongly in judicial restraint, which is we should not be deciding things we don't have to decide. And so if there's a way to resolve a dispute without reaching a constitutional question, we should try to do it that way.
The vast majority of cases before the Supreme Court are non-controversial, but rulings that require constitutional interpretation are the most heavily scrutinized, especially by the policymakers who write laws that are challenged. Eddy says justices need to remain neutral in those political headwinds.
I believe Montanans are entitled to fair, impartial, nonpartisan justice. They are entitled to justices on the Montana Supreme Court who are not afraid to guard the Montana Constitution and who will keep politics out of the courtroom.
Some Montana Republicans call for judges and justices to run under party labels, saying it's important information for voters. It's a source of ongoing tension, as the GOP accuses Montana courts of having a liberal bias, calling some judges activists. But many, including Eddy, say partisanship would erode the judiciary's integrity.
The description of an activist court is primarily a pejorative term used by someone who doesn't like the result. And sometimes there are policy goals of political parties that don't match up with our constitutional obligations.
Eddy launched her campaign after the last legislative session ended, just in case a bill passed making judicial elections partisan.
So we waited so I can announce as an independent, and we would have been gathering signatures right now. Because I don't want to be tied to the political party platform.
Eddy says she won't attend any events sponsored by political parties or meet with political leaders. Eddy accepted an endorsement from Montana conservation voters, saying the policy focus group draws a broad coalition. Wilson is taking a looser approach. He was the keynote speaker at the Montana GOP's winter kickoff in February. The party is making his election a top priority. But Wilson says that doesn't mean he's beholden to party leaders.
This is a nonpartisan race, and the one thing you discover as a judicial candidate quicker than anything else is that you don't pick your supporters pick you.
Campaign finance records have long revealed the political support that nonpartisan candidates draw. Prominent Republicans have donated to Wilson's campaign, and prominent Democrats have donated to Eddy's. Wilson, who's been a judge since 2017, says he's guided by his judicial philosophy and principles, and if that aligns more with one party than the other, then so be it. He's also aligned with the GOP on criticism of recent Montana Supreme Court decisions.
I also have a passion for our Constitution and the rule of law, and it's concerning to me to have observed over the last few years what I think have been a departure from what I think are the best norms for our Supreme Court and what I believe is judicial activism.
Wilson gave an example of a 2024 case. The High Court ruled that a longstanding mandatory penalty for multiple DUI convictions was unconstitutional. Wilson says that penalty wasn't at issue before it reached the Supreme Court, but the court reviewed it anyways. He says that's an overreach.
And the reason that I think that it was improper and it was a radical departure, in my view, from established ways of reviewing cases and established constitutional law was because the facts and the reasons they had for declaring it constitutional weren't present in the case.
Wilson noted the court overturned that precedent in another case earlier this year, revealing it erred. Wilson describes himself as a classic constitutional conservative. That philosophy requires judges to apply the Constitution as a static document, not interpreting beyond what's written or originally intended.
A judicial constitutional conservative values facts over feelings and principles above all else.
Wilson and Eddy will appear on Montana's primary ballot, but the race won't be decided until November. In Helena, I'm Shaylee Rager.
Montana State University Billings Chancellor Dr. Stephanie Hixwa marked her fifth MSUB graduation last month. Dr. Hixwa grew up on a Montana farm and attended high school in Dillon. She is deeply invested in student success, and an incident early in her youthful academic life focused her future on opening doors and on keeping those doors open.
When my high school counselor told me that I probably shouldn't plan on going to college because I couldn't afford it.
That challenge led her to the University of Montana. That led to an active role in keeping students on track as an advisor. Her first professional employment came as an academic advisor at Flathead Valley Community College. While advising at Flathead, she was motivated to set a very specific goal for her career path. She says she knew the exact target position and the exact time she would need to complete it.
I can do this in 10 years. Then they asked us, kind of at the next session, where do you want to do it? And I said, Miles Community College. And I was president of Miles Community College 10 years later.
For the complete interview with MSU Billings Chancellor Dr. Stephanie Hixwa, you can go to ypradio.org. Montana State University Billings Chancellor Dr. Stephanie Hixwa marked her fifth MSUB graduation last month. Dr. Hixwa's path to higher education leadership did not begin easily. Dr. Hixwa is deeply invested in student success, and much of that drive started young.
My leadership journey started in high school when my high school counselor told me that I probably shouldn't plan on going to college because I couldn't afford it. And I thought, wait a minute, how is that possible? So that led me to research financial aid and scholarships. And I found out pretty quickly that being involved in clubs and organizations and leadership and service was a route to scholarships. And I was already in Honor Society, and the National Honor Society focuses on scholarship, citizenship, and service. And I love to help people and all that kind of thing. But I thought, well, in order to get scholarships, I need to run for president or I need to take on projects. So I started raising my hand and the leadership bug bit me.
Had you shown this kind of, before it became this formal sort of approach, had you shown this kind of growing up? I'll take charge of this.
I was the oldest sibling, so that's kind of in a family, right? I was the oldest girl with three younger brothers. So, of course, that was kind of just in my DNA. I do have control issues, so my husband would mention my control issues. Maybe a little bit, but I love to help people. I always love to help people. I am a hard worker. Like I said, I grew up on a farm and hard work was always something that I did. So leadership wasn't that different, but it was very intentional in order to go to college. I really, really wanted that opportunity. And I was a good student because I worked hard.
That hard work paid off as she entered the workforce.
One of my work study jobs at the University of Montana was academic advising. And I was involved in the ambassador program there, which helped students with summer orientation advising. And so that was my first job out of college at Flathead Valley Community College, working in a federal TRIO program, helping students to transfer. So I was the academic advisor, helped them transfer to MSUB. I brought a bunch of students to MSUB.
While at Flathead Valley, Dr. Hixwa was asked about attending a leadership conference. That conference changed everything.
The Flathead Valley Community College president at the time asked me if I would be interested in going to this National Institute for Leadership for Development for Women. Little did I know, Carl, it was College President Training School. They were looking at the number of baby boomers retiring out of higher ed and wanting to make sure to have a pipeline of leaders ready to take on presidencies. And this is no lie. I set a goal at that retreat to be a president in 10 years. I was 27 years old at that retreat, and they asked us, okay, what do you have to do to get there? So I needed to get a PhD and all the things. And I thought, I can do this in 10 years. Then they asked us, kind of at the next session, where do you want to do it? And I said, Miles Community College. And I was president of Miles Community College 10 years later.
That was MSU Billings Chancellor Dr. Stephanie Hixwa. For the complete interview, go to ypradio.org. That's The Worm for this Monday. Catch up with us tomorrow. There'll be another episode for you early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about the worm is available at ypradio.org.